And welcome back to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I guess in a way it's a perfect transition to check in with the most optimistic guy I know in this environmental community, John DeGraff, who I've had the pleasure of knowing for most of the time I've been doing The Green Beat radio. He's been doing television producing. He's been an author, a lecturer, generally coming up with really inspiring campaigns. So I think it'll be a nice antidote to Andre's dark message. But I don't kill the messenger. I don't believe in, you know, not having someone like Andre Angelantoni on. He's with the Post-Peak Living Institute because he has a message that is disturbing. Au contraire, we need to know what some people are saying we are facing, and if necessary, prepare. But in the meantime, we should try to eke out as much happiness as we can. So without further delay, I want to welcome John DeGraff to The Green Front. Hey, John. John, you there?
Yeah. Hi, Betsy.
So you are the creator of Take Back Your Time. That's just one of the organizations that challenges time poverty and how we tend to be workaholics here in the United States, and yet we're not necessarily happier. Of course, you are the co-author of the best-selling book Affluenza, The All-Consuming Epidemic. I know there was a movie under that same title, and
right.
Take Back Your Time grew out of that. What are you working on today? And I bet you have some belief that vacations are still a good thing, even though Andre's message, as he ended his lecture to our class a few weeks ago, was cancel that vacation. So I thought this would be a nice juxtaposition.
Well, it probably depends on where you're going on the vacation. I think the time off is a hugely important thing. Maybe if people could spend it more in less costly vacations and less more eco-friendly vacations, and even sometimes closer to home and exploring the local national parks or things like that, I still believe that we've got to have that kind of thing, and that leisure is a huge important part of life. I really believe that the greater threats and I agree with Andre that we can't grow on like this. We've got to change that. The signs are all that way. But in my view, the bigger threat to that is the productivist attitude that we have to keep producing more and consuming more. And that, I think, is the threat. To the extent that more vacation time actually has us consuming less, and I believe it would, because we wouldn't be producing so much and making so much. I think if we were to take some of our gains in productivity in the time of a lot more free time instead of stuff, that's exactly what we ought to be doing to reduce consumption and to be reducing some of the threats that Andre quite rightly talks about.
Well, I guess at the heart of what he's talking about, and in a way what we're talking about too, is in regards to your work, you know, America's success has been built on development and growth, and for a long time just unchecked growth, and really to some extent the only check on the growth is, you know, just because we're starting to come up against the economic and ecological, you know, costs of our going into such deep debt, overusing, overconsuming, and not really reflecting the true price and cost of that. You know, can we thrive as a country without buying so much stuff?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think the only way we can thrive as a country is to turn away from our obsession with money and stuff and growth and start thinking about all of those other important parts of life that we are sacrificing right now in order to continue this rather crazy quest for, you know, endless increases in the GDP and all of that. And I really believe that the environmental message, if we were to turn things around, has to be a positive message. It has to be a message that says the sacrifice is now, not folks, you've got to be grim and sacrifice in the future and everything is going to go to hell, et cetera, but that we are sacrificing now. Let's give you some examples. Gallup does a poll annually, a happiness poll, for example, and they poll 150 countries. When they find that the United States, in terms of self-reported stress, ranks fifth from the bottom. There are only five other countries that report more stress than we do. We've seen an increase in chronic loneliness among Americans over the age of 45 from 20% to 35% just in the last decade. That was an AARP Time magazine study. We Americans are now consuming two-thirds of the world's antidepressants each year. That's a depressing thought. But
so we're not over-consuming. In addition to all the other overconsumption and we're also pretty heavy.
But the point is, it's not working.
Prozac.
Yeah, what we're doing now is not working. It's not working for the environment. Andre's absolutely right about that. It's not working financially, and the speculation is crazy. And if we can't control that, we're in very bad shape. My new book is called What's the Economy For Anyway, and I go into many of those same issues. That'll be out in September. But equally, it's not working socially. It's not working for our well-being and for our quality of life and for our happiness. It's crazy what we're doing, and that's what we're trying to turn around with the Happiness Project, which I am currently involved in with a wonderful organization called Sustainable Seattle.
Yes, and I want to hear all about that. I just want to mention about a month ago I had Colin Bevan on, No Impact Man, and I love his book and his story. Like you, he is saying, you know, with all this overconsumption, you know, do we have, you know, extreme happiness to show for it? No, we don't, au contraire, compared to other cultures. So if we are going to go down by, you know, blindly using up every last resource that we get from Mother Earth, we should at least have something to show for it besides a lot of depressed people. There's an opportunity here, and let's grab it now. And yet, and you know, it's all about, like you say, isolation and lack of community. And we start to see trends like transition towns and people reaching out. And it does address, you know, two major issues we face in America, and that is overconsumption and isolation. And that's why I love this movement to, you know, create a more sustainable future and present. And yet there have been so many obstacles, haven't there? Yes, good things along the way, but my goodness, in terms of government leadership, in terms of just the extreme quick decline of so many ecological, you know, signals, it's disturbing. So we, every day, don't we battle that, you know, optimism and pessimism, and Andre's message is almost, it's too late, we can't even hope that electric cars and solar and wind technology is going to get us out of this, and yet we have to have hope, don't we?
Yes, and I would agree with Andre that we can't depend on technology to solve this problem. It is not going to do it. We can't simply have enough change in technology to prevent these things from happening. We have to find a way to progress without continuing to grow in an economic sense, and with changing our whole focus toward these things like social connection and relationship and time. And that's why vacations are important. Just having time is important, having time to spend with other people, to take things slow, even to take your vacation, you know, in the form of a pilgrimage, a walk, something like this, instead of having so little time that you jet set to Club Med and back for your vacation. The whole process of overconsumption is also leading us to an immense amount of overwork. The overwork is breaking down our social relationships and the environment. And then we're told that the way to get the social relationships back is to buy another product that will make us popular. So this is a vicious cycle. It is not working. We need to understand that the key to happiness is in a completely different place, and that if we start going in that direction and think about it, we can be happier and far more sustainable at the same time.
And, you know, if one is, you know, barely able to afford that vacation in Hawaii, how much can you enjoy laying on the beach if you know you're just going further into debt? You know, there is that reality, the cognitive dissonance that so many of us feel with, you know, so much lack of expendable income.
Well, that's absolutely right, and you know, and that's a function of this enormous increasing gap between rich and poor in this country. You know, we've seen a situation where in the last 30 years, the share of the annual income earned by the top 1% of the population has increased from 8% of the total to 24% of the total, while the share of the bottom 50%, a whole half of the population, has dropped to 20%. In other words, the top 1% of Americans are earning more than the bottom 50% all put together. This is unheard of in any other industrial country. It is absolutely not only unjust and unfair, but it's absolutely unsustainable, and it will lead to exactly the crisis that Andre talks about.
So tell us about the Happiness Project and your quiz that I just took right before the program.
Well, the Happiness Project is really, you know, I spoke at a conference called the International Gross National Happiness Conference in Brazil about a year and a half ago. and met a lot of folks from Bhutan, which really developed this whole idea of gross national happiness instead of gross national product. Their message, Bhutan, this little country in the Himalayas, has been kind of branding this message and getting it out all over the world. And so people really increasingly in other parts of the world are saying we need a new measurement for how well we're doing. And so scientists working with Bhutan created an international survey that tells us how we're doing in 9 key domains of well-being or happiness. And the survey is fascinating. I think you just took it. We have it online at sustainableseattle.org so that anybody can take it who speaks English. It will soon be up in Spanish, and we're trying to get it into other languages as well. What it tells us is clearly that, you know, it's not just material well-being that matters. There are these 9 domains. They include psychological well-being, physical health, time balance. That's a big one, and that's actually where we see the lowest scores. It includes good governance, democratic governance. We're seeing the need for that all over the Middle East right now. It includes education. It includes culture vitality, access to the arts and culture. Includes community vitality, social support, hugely important. Includes a quality environment. So, you know, when you start measuring those things and not just GDP, you get a very different picture. And I think this survey allows us to begin to have a different conversation at this local level, the state level, the national level, about, you know, where we're headed and where we want to go. And that's the beginning of the conversation that can lead us to turn this around and to see that we can be happier if we consume less, if we work less, if we focus on other human beings and on taking care of this remarkable planet we live on.
And in one of the blogs you wrote a couple of years ago, very cleverly titled Irritable Growl Syndrome, G-R-O-W-L, you talk about, you know, how America has the grossest domestic product. I remember years ago I was shocked to learn how much of society's ills are contained in the GDP.
Yeah,
well,
right.
More,
you know,
more
if you
prisons,
have, if you have
more
a mouth
car
bill,
accidents,
it's a great
more
thing.
Cancer.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, if you walk to work, it's a waste of time, or you bike or whatever, as far as the GDP is concerned. If you drive to work in a car using a lot of gasoline, and then you have an accident, and you have to have a lot of legal bills and medical bills and all kinds of things, and, your car has to be fixed and repaired and so forth, then you're doing wonders. You are remarkable in terms of the GDP. So it just measures all the wrong things. Bobby Kennedy told us that way back in 1968. He said it measures everything about what we need to know about what's important. It doesn't tell if we volunteer in our community. It's a waste of time as far as the GDP is concerned. Go take a walk, a healthy walk in nature. That doesn't count either. The only thing counts if you go to a health club or something and spend money. The GDP just tells us how much money we're spending. And if we're spending a heck of a lot of that money to repair things that are going wrong, then that's a very bad indication of the health of a country.
And just our current snapshot, looking at the employment picture, we have this dichotomy between, you know, so many people unemployed or underemployed who really truly want to work, and then those left, you know, working for these big companies are overworked. They're being, you know, really pushed to the limit. How can we distribute this so that those who have no work and are being underutilized can have a decent amount of work, and those who are overworked can have a hope for a balanced life and living past the age of 50?
Well, I think the start is to develop a law like the one they have in the Netherlands, which allows anybody to reduce their working hours without losing their job, without losing their health care. Their benefits are prorated, and of course they make a little less money because they're working less, but their salary per hour is unchanged. This is a law in the Netherlands. It's the law in Germany. This is has led to the Netherlands having nearly half the population working part-time and liking it. When people have that option to pull back a little bit, then jobs open up for other people. You can also do it by simply limiting the work week. But we can't do this on the backs of the poor. We can't do this on the backs of people who are working 2-3 jobs because they don't make enough pay per hour. We also have to deal with a living wage and a minimum wage for people, and we have to change our phenomenally unfair tax system, which right now has people at the bottom of the pile paying more, a larger share of their total taxes than people at the top. Yeah, they don't pay much in federal income tax if they're at the bottom, but when you add the state taxes and the excise taxes and all of that, poor people end up paying larger proportions of their income in taxes than the rich. That has to change. We have to turn that around.
It seems like we just have such a stressed out population between those who are working either multiple jobs or working very long hours at one job, and those who are, again, underemployed, and they're stressed out too. So
yeah, and,
how do we turn this around,
and
John?
Some people will say, oh, they're just working those long hours because they want to work them. You know, everybody's just putting in all this stuff time because they want to. Well, and that really doesn't hold up when you look at the Gallup survey. Gallup does a daily survey on how happy Americans are, and it finds that Americans are 20% happier on weekends than on work days. Big surprise. We're 30 to 40% happier on holidays than we are on work days. When you look at the unhappiest time of the week for everybody, it's Monday morning. It's also the time we have the most heart attacks. So, you know, this work yourself to death in order to produce, and consume is a recipe for disaster. It's not only a recipe for the kind of environmental disaster that Andre talks about and that we ought to talk about, it's a recipe for personal and quality of life disaster. And if we can see that our quality of life, that a good quality of life depends on turning that around, and we can have better lives with less stuff, then we're more likely to do it than if we just, if environmentalists just try to scare us into it.
Mm-hmm. So is there anyone besides yourself and your wonderful organizations that you see on the national scene that are really getting this message to Washington, to our legislators, to our leaders? I mean, in a way, just knowing what we know, what you're talking about, is an advancement. And yet, when you look at where we are politically, environmentally, there's so many signs that we should be discouraged. And this is, I guess, where I wake up every day with so much dissonance and ambiguity, you know, vacillating between hope and despair on an almost hourly basis.
Well, we have to change the national scene. We absolutely have to, and we have to get in the work to get, number one, to get our folks to vote, because they didn't last November, and that was a shame. And so we have let the foxes guard the chicken coop in that regard. On the other hand, I'm quite hopeful at the local level. Our city council, for example, in Seattle, has been hugely supportive of our happiness initiative. Our city council president has said, these are just the kind of questions and surveys we need to make public policy, and we will use them to guide our public policy and to see what we ought to do as a city. So that gives me great hope, and hopefully as this project spreads from Seattle to other cities around the country, and we believe that it will, it's certainly spreading around the world in places like Brazil and Canada. Even the conservative Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has said that they're going to start measuring well-being and happiness along with the GDP. So there's some major changes in a positive direction, but our federal government right now is a disaster because of what we've allowed to happen, what we allowed to happen last November.
And we just have two more minutes, not even. You know, we baby boomers, are we going to finally turn around what has looked like a bit of a selfish generation, a little bit narcissistic, if not, you know, overly materialistic, as we come of middle age or beyond, I guess, wishful thinking coming into middle age?
Well, hopefully when you get to be that age, and I was the first year of the baby boomers, so I'm kind
I'm right
of
smack
older,
down in the middle. I'm right
older
in the middle
guy now. You start seeing that what matters in life is just not all this stuff. I mean, when you reach your deathbed, what you want to say is, wow, I made a difference for the world. I made people happier. I had a lot of friends. I connected with people. I did things that mattered. I think to the extent that baby boomers start realizing those things and start realizing that being selfish and being greedy is not in our self-interest. It is not enlightened self-interest at all. It is stupidity.
So,
and it is leading us to disaster.
Checking the planet is not in her interest. John, we're just out of time. I want to thank you for doing what you're doing in the world, and I didn't mean to cut you off mid-sentence. You can complete your thought, and then we'll have to say goodbye.
Okay. Well, thank you, Betsy, and thank you for what you're doing in the world, and I encourage people to go to the website, sustainableseattle.org, check out the survey and the things that we're doing, and help make the world a better place.
And thanks for listening to The Green Front. If you'd like to hear the show in its entirety, and I highly recommend it, with John DeGraff and Andre Angelantoni, go to the Greenfront.com. See you next time. Have a great green week.